In April, a slim majority on the state's top court overturned the 2020 rape conviction of Harvey Weinstein, tossing out his 23-year prison sentence, finding that the trial court erred in allowing outside testimony of alleged prior sexual crimes by the Hollywood mogul. The decision means that Weinstein, who was also sentenced to 16 years in prison by a California court for another rape, could face another trial in New York. To discuss these developments, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Peter Polano, managing partner at Tully Rinke's Rochester office, where he practices criminal defense. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you for having me.
So much like the high-profile rape case against Bill Cosby in 2018, the New York court hearing the rape charges against Harvey Weinstein allowed testimony of alleged prior sexual crimes perpetrated against women other than the complainant in that specific case. How common is this type of testimony of alleged prior bad acts in criminal court cases?
I don't think it's all that common. I've gone over the Court of Appeals decision, and typically, I mean, the hard and fast rule in New York State is that a defendant should be tried on the charges against him and not on extraneous evidence. You're going to hear me talk about it as bad guy evidence a lot. That is the rule. And very typically, prosecutors will push to get in extraneous evidence if they think it has some relevance, some assistance. In this case, I think they pushed too far. I think there were just way too many. The court let everything in. And, you know, as the majority of the Court of Appeals points out, it was a surprising amount of evidence that came in on top of the three complaints against Weinstein. And as a result, we don't really know what the jury convicted him on. That was the problem. I would say in a more typical case, you would have seen fewer attempts by the prosecution to get this stuff in, and maybe also a court that was acting a little bit more as a gatekeeper and restraining the prosecution for all the things that they did try to bring in.
Proponents of the approach by the prosecution in the Weinstein case argue a couple things. One, that crimes of sexual violence are often not isolated incidences, that the perpetrators are recidivists, and also that sexual violence crimes are unique in the severe nature of them. And these two factors combined for this idea that there should be testimony from these outside voices. What do you think of those arguments? Is there anything to them legally, or are they mostly just tugging on, I guess, sentiments of juries and judges?
The first of the two arguments, the recidivist argument, is exactly why we have, it's known as the Mullineaux rule, that the Mullineaux rule basically says that's the type of evidence that cannot come in. You can't convict him on a specific sex offense because we generally know him to be a sex offender, and this is the kind of stuff they do. That's exactly what we're avoiding. The question is, did he do what he's alleged to have done to this specific individual, or in this case, three individuals? Other charges that show he's a bad guy, if they haven't been charged, they should be kept out. With respect to the second argument that there's something more sensitive about a sex offense than others, that may allow for certain evidence to come in given the right situation. But what we had here was essentially there were three complainants in the indictment itself, and the judge allowed three more witnesses to talk about other things that weren't in the complaint itself, that weren't in the indictment, essentially doubling the amount of evidence against him without having had that evidence go through the grand jury and face any scrutiny. The court, in the beginning of the decision, went through a laundry list of what was brought in and said it was too much. I don't know that they actually parsed it down as to what might be admissible the next time around or not. But there are circumstances, situations where some of this evidence could come in, and given the right situations. One of the arguments the prosecution made at trial was that these additional three witnesses helped to prove the intent relative to the three crimes charged. And the majority opinion in the court made relatively quick work of that, because the actual allegations against Weinstein, the intent was built into them. He was blocking these women from leaving the room. He was throwing people around. I mean, there were some very serious allegations that left no question as to what his intent was at the time. So to bring in three separate crimes to prove intent seemed like quite a stretch to the court. And again, intent would be one of those opportunities where they could bring in some amount, but here they went far afield and brought in an awful lot of evidence. And as a result, we have a vacated conviction and a new trial that's going to come up in the future.
Well, before we talk about that new trial, let me reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. This is the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Peter Polano, managing partner at Tully Rinke's Rochester office, where he practices criminal defense. So for New York prosecutors who have indicated they want to retry Weinstein, how will the presentation of their case be different in light of the Court of Appeals ruling? Do you feel like there are stricter guardrails that have been set down? Or, as you mentioned, there's some ambiguity in this ruling. Could we still see some elements of that past approach as it pertains to hearing from outside voices in a future trial?
I think we'll see a more tapered and focused prosecution. Cut it a little closer to the bone. You've got three women who have made their allegations that they were wrong. They can describe what happened. Make that the center of your case, first and foremost. There are extraneous matters, and I fully anticipate the prosecution will once again attempt. They make the application prior to trial that they'll try to get some of this stuff in. I would be surprised that the additional three women come in. I just think that one, the court was pretty clear that would go afield of the Mulineaux requirement. As to some of the other matters that might come in, first in the case in chief, and then more importantly, should Weinstein decide to testify, some of them still will come in against him or would be a cautionary exercise for him if he were to choose to testify, and it may well keep him off the stand. I think we'll see in many ways the same trial, but it will be parsed down and focused on what's actually in the indictment. And the jury will still go through every count, every witness, and determine the guilt or innocence on each count.
In the wake of this ruling from the state's top court, there has been some clamoring from Democrats in the state legislature to update New York law to address the evidence that can be admitted in the state criminal court, with proponents of this legislation saying they just want to codify an aspect of the federal rules of evidence, which they say allows the court to admit evidence that the defendant committed other past sexual assaults. What do you think of that type of legislative effort?
I'm not in favor of it. I think there are, within New York law, there are several things that can be done. The federal rule is certainly more strict. I've represented individuals in both state and federal court. And I do find that our state system, as we have it right now, protects a defendant's rights to a fair trial. We will make sure in New York that someone who's found guilty is only found guilty of a crime they were already charged with. What's missing from this whole equation is these were the three additional witnesses who came in were all older cases. The prosecution did have an opportunity once upon a time to include them in the indictment, and for whatever reasons had made the election not to include them in the indictment, not to charge with the crimes. And then they turn around and try to basically get the evidence before a jury anyway. There's no question that a federal rules of evidence analysis would let more of this in. I'm not sure all of it comes in even under the federal rules, but we've got a solid rule in New York State. It does protect criminal defendants, and that is real important. Harvey Weinstein's a real bad guy. That's been shown in many different ways. It's been shown in the California and even in the New York convictions. But what we don't do is convict an individual just because they're a real bad guy. adding in the other stuff, changing the rules, is going to muddy the waters. And I think it's going to open up a lot of convictions to more scrutiny. And I think, again, the rule as we have it works. In this case, I don't think the rules were applied as well as they should have been. The prosecution reached for the sky, and the judge let him. And that was the 1-2 punch. All in all, we've got a good rule in New York. I don't think we need to change just because there's an outcome here that some people don't like. It's important to keep a strong rule to protect defendants and make sure you're not convicting someone for the wrong reasons. And that's what we've got right now on the books in New York.
Well, the liberalized evidentiary rulings from the trial court judges in both the Weinstein and the Cosby cases came in the wake and really in the throes of the Me Too movement. So I'm curious whether you think the cultural phenomenon influenced the way the judges proceeded in these cases. And in your 3+ decades of criminal defense work, have you seen cultural events influence the way judges approach criminal trials?
I certainly have seen things like that. Even in the decision, in this case where the case is reversed, I know one of the dissenting judges talked about the women of New York State and what is needed. And it did have much more of a political flavor to that portion of the opinion. It's always a problem with judges. Our judges are elected officials. Certain cases bring a lot of media attention. Whether it's the trial level or the appellate level, you do find, I think, external pressures on judges to decide things a certain way because of culture changes. And Me Too is one example of that that has snuck into, it's certainly front and center in our political system, which is where it should be. But in our legal system, it doesn't necessarily fit the same way. The unseemliness of a specific case should not affect any decision. I've represented individuals in multiple homicide cases, things like that. And it becomes harder and harder to pick a jury because of media attention and because whatever may have been put out there about a victim or something like that. We have within our system means of dealing with that, and we need to. It's always going to be there. There's always going to be some hot button political issue that will attempt to influence our legal cases. But that's a temptation that we all need to avoid in the criminal justice system. We deal with cases that are incredibly unpopular, but those people are still presumed innocent, and they get the same rights as someone who we love and adore. There's no exception in our rules just because a person is a pariah, is a social pariah, is considered such a bad actor. They still get the full force and effect of our constitutional protections. If they're found guilty, we can all go to sleep at night knowing that it was a sound conviction. And if they're acquitted, we at least know that the system worked and worked the way it's supposed to, leaving the burden on the prosecution. And it is a high burden. They've got to meet it.
Well, we've been speaking with Peter Polano. He is a managing partner at Tully Rinke's Rochester office, where he practices criminal defense. Peter, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. Visit unionstrongny.org for more information. Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.